Classic Business with Michael Avery on FMR.
Well, August saw a major reversal of fortunes for the markets after July's bounce back, and I think a larger majority of investors really now believe that the global economy is likely to tip into recession within the next 12 months. That's according to the latest Bank of America Global Fund Manager survey. It put a net 58% of respondents believing that recession is likely, up from a net 47% a month earlier. Now, that net figure, which represents positive answers less negative ones, is the highest reading that we've seen since May of 2020. It was really in the height of the lockdown, so peak pessimism, it seems. Let's find out what the animal spirits are telling us with Chris Holdsworth, Chief Investment Strategist at Investec Wealth and Investment. Great to chat again, Chris. Now, the market reaction faded into the session following what looked like a decent US jobs report on Friday. What do you make of it?
Hi, Michael. Yeah, it's pretty interesting. At first glance, the jobs number was pretty good. 315,000 jobs added. That's a bit above the consensus forecast of around 300,000. And it was the fourth month in a row that the number had beat consensus expectations. But, and there's a fairly big but, it's worth scratching and sniffing a little bit to look at the underlying detail. For one, while the headline number did surprise marginally on the upside, in the background there was a downward revision of over 100,000 jobs to the previous 2 months. So all told, it was actually a slightly disappointing number once you account for that. The second point, and we don't normally delve into the weeds on this sort of thing, is that there are two employment surveys in the U.S., The one which attracts all the headlines is the establishment survey. You go around, you speak to companies, you ask them, how many people have you hired or fired over the past month? And that's the non-farm payrolls number. But there's another survey where you go around to households and you ask them, are you employed or not? And it's pretty standard practice. A lot of countries have these two surveys, South Africa included. What's interesting is at the moment in the US, those surveys are telling us very different things. If you go around and you ask companies, are you hiring people or not? They're saying they are. And there's a net result over the past 6 months, according to the non-farm payrolls numbers, the U.S. has added 2 million jobs. But if you go around asking people, have you got an extra job or not, or are you employed or not, it's showing that there were only 1 million jobs added over the past 6 months. So there's a big gap between the two. Now, part of that can be explained by people taking on two jobs. So two different corporates will say they've got an extra job, and there'll be two numbers going up in the non-farm payrolls, whereas the employment number will only go up by one. But even after you account for that, it's not clear what's causing the difference between these. It's still a sizable difference. Mm. And the reason it's important is that unequivocally, U.S. economic growth has slowed. The U.S. economy is only up 1.5% year on year. According to non-farm payrolls, though, employment's up 4% year on year. And that difference is the largest that we've seen in 80 years of data. So it's anomalous. This labor market is anomalous. And given the disconnect between the non-farm payrolls number and the GDP numbers, one would think one of them has got to be revised. And now that the household number is showing actually lower employment than the non-farm payrolls, it tells us that the GDP numbers might be right and the employment numbers might be wrong. And so we need to keep a close eye on this. It may well be the case that the U.S. labor market is not as tight as has recently been reported. And these numbers may well be revised. We'll have to wait for a couple of months to be sure. But either the GDP numbers are all right or the employment numbers are right. It's very unlikely that they're both are going to remain unrevised at current levels.
And this obviously has a big impact on which way the Fed is going to swing and how hard the Fed is going to swing as well. What are you seeing in the wage growth numbers? Because that's also critical, and it does look like wage growth is slowing in the US.
Yeah, that's another sign of a less tight labor market. Total wage growth was just a bit above 5%, but the real driver of wage growth over the past year and a half has been wage growth at the very low end. We've had a reduction in inequality. As we've heard, there was this mass quitting, and people, once they'd received checks, didn't need to work, and they were pushing up wages. But wage growth at the very low end is actually starting to slow as well. If you look at restaurant workers as an example, around 3 or 4 months or so ago, wage growth for restaurant workers in the U.S. was 16%. Yeah, it's sizable, well above inflation at that point. That's now slowed down to 10%. Versus inflation of around 8 and a bit. It's still above inflation, but there's a material slowdown in that space. And if you look at indications with regards to hiring, there's further indications that there's a slowdown in that hiring market as well.
Is this filtering through into demand at all yet? What impact is this having on global supply chains as well? Because we've seen the Baltic Dry has certainly come off its recent highs. So what are you seeing in all of this and the impact on demand?
Well, we are, Michael, and that's an interesting point. It's the focus point at this point. When will the U.S. go into recession? Are we heading in that way at the moment? And the first concern is the decline in imports that we're seeing in the U.S. And that's a clear indicator that there's less demand in the U.S. And the reason that we're seeing imports roll over is because retailers across the U.S. now have very large levels of inventory. There was a massive attempt to stockpile on the basis that retail sales would continue to be strong. Retail sales are now disappointed, so we've got these very large inventories, so the U.S. is importing less. And that in itself tells us that the U.S. economy is slowing, for one, but for two, it also materially reduces pressure on global supply chains at the same time.
Now, Chris, given all of this and what we saw over in Jackson Hole last Friday, that 7 minutes of hawkish hell, what is your reading of the Fed tea leaves at the moment?
Well, I mean, this is pretty interesting. We've just spoken now about the signs of the U.S. slowing and the fact that there's less inflationary pressure. But the Fed doesn't see it that way. They're absolutely adamant that they need to see inflation at a lower level and they need it to decrease more rapidly than it currently looks like it's decreasing. So they're sending a hawkish message to the market, and the market is believing. And so what's currently priced in is for the Fed to hike rates by around 140 basis points between now and May next year, and 75 of those could occur as soon as this month. In addition to all of that, the market is less convinced that we'll actually start to see rate cuts next year at all. So it's priced in a total of 2 extra rate hikes over the past month between now and the end of 2023. So it's some pretty bearish messaging from the Fed, and it shifted up that yield curve at the short end in the U.S. And I would say at this point, the market is pretty convinced, actually, that the Fed's going to continue to be aggressive until at least the middle of next year.
And I've heard quite a few Fed speakers talk about 4%. That seems to be the magical number here that the Fed is aiming for. Surely 4% tips the world into recession.
Yeah, we've done quite a lot of work on this around trying to estimate the probability of recession over the next 12 months and then over the next 18 months if the Fed does what they say they're going to do. So first of all, at a starting point, you mentioned earlier more than 50% of market participants believe that there's a recession in the next 12 months. There are a couple of other indicators suggesting that the probability is more than 50%. If you look at the consensus forecast, it's more than 50% at this point. If you look at the model of the yield curve, looking at the 10-year minus 2-year, that those are bond yields, 10-year bond yield minus 2-year bond yield, that suggests more than 50% as well. The one part of the yield that's suggesting that it's not yet 50% is a very short end, cash rates. If you look at the 10-year bond yield minus cash rates, that still suggests a low probability. But fast forward 6 months, if the Fed does what they say they're going to do, then the short end too is going to suggest more than 50%. And at this point, it looks like a recession in the U.S. is inescapable within the next 12 months, especially if the Fed does what they've guided they're going to do, which in an environment of slowing growth already and inflation rolling over, you could argue in a few years' time, will be looked back as a policy error. Yep. But nonetheless, that is their view at the moment, and that's what's driving markets.
And I want to stay on that issue for a little longer because it's fast, it's furious, and it's toxic for other asset classes. It's the rise in that 10-year U.S. yield, and it's seen by some as really the true benchmark for borrowing costs, and they've certainly soared over the last 6 months from negative territory while the Fed turned ever more hawkish and admitted its mistakes on inflation being transitory. Now, investors calculate real yields by adjusting nominal ones for inflation. That's the biggest surge since the U.S. government started selling inflation-protected securities in the late 1990s over the last 6 months. So it surpassed the routes that we saw during the global financial crisis, as well as the taper tantrum of 2013. What does this mean for markets?
Yeah, we've done quite a bit of work on this as well. So we've gone back to the 60s, and there are 9 occasions between then and now where the Fed has hiked by as much as they've hiked in this cycle, and then hiked by another 150 basis points after that. And so what we've done is we said, okay, let's look at these 9 different cycles and then see what happens to markets for that second set of hikes. We know what happens to the first hike. It's just happened now. But what happens when they hike beyond that? And what typically happens is that you do see the yield curve becoming inverted. You do land up with a greater probability of recession. But at the same time, you also land up with bonds, U.S. bonds in particular, offering some form of defense. So what normally happens is that the cash rate goes up, but those long bond yields don't move at all. Or if they do move, they move by a very small amount. So if you happen to be invested in those long bond yields, they offer protection in an environment where that short end goes up, putting pressure on equities. So if we land up in a recession, it's not great for equities, but based on the nine cycles before, it's less bad for bonds. And we know that bonds haven't offered a lot of protection for in the US over the past 18 months or so. It does appear that it might be their turn to shine now, right, especially if the Fed were to continue on this trajectory.
Chris, we're going to have to leave it there. That was Chris Holdsworth, Chief Investment Strategist at Investec Wealth and Investments, with the animal spirits here on Classic Business.
Classic Business with Michael Avery on FMR.